Okay, so this is Bio 160, and it's Thursday, September 18th, and we're in the middle of the tissues chapter, or histology. We'll finish that today and move on to the integumentary system. What's the integumentary system?
Skin.
That's skin, right? Oh, you guys know. We don't even have to cover it in lecture. We're done. Okay. But let's just review a little bit on tissue. All right, to help us remember what's going on, what we've talked about so far. How many different kinds of tissues are in your body?
Four.
There's only four kinds, that's right. Epithelium, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. So that's pretty easy, but you gotta have that on the tip of your tongue. And we were talking about epithelium, and generally speaking, what does an epithelium do? What's the job of an epithelium? Covers structures in your body, lines a cavity, or covers a surface. So it's a covering for something. And we talked about epithelium because it has different shaped cells and it can have a number of different layers. So that's how we classify an epithelium. Yeah? Oh, yeah, they're right here. Let me, who needs handouts? I'm going to pass, yeah, take one and just kind of pass it up that way. As a matter of fact, here we go. Just kind of pass them that way and all the way to the back of the room if you need a handout. Great. Okay, so what are the shapes of cells? What kind of shape can a cell have? Squamous, cuboidal, columnar, and then there's a funny kind.
Pseudostratus.
Yeah, that's a funny kind, but there's another funny kind. Yeah, because it changes shape. Yeah. Transitional. So I like squamous, cuboidal, columnar, and transitional. The pseudostratified are columnar cells, So the transitional, oh, by the way, where do you find that transitional epithelium?
Bladder.
Urinary bladder and linings of the urinary tract. Right, okay. That's good. So I think we're pretty much done with epithelium. Just make sure, you know, cells by their particular shape. And if we just look at a little representation of an epithelium, when you're going to work with an epithelium, you want to find the basement membrane and the apical surface. This is the inside of a tube. We would call that the lumen of a tube. Right? So train your eyes to always find that basement membrane and the apical surface. And how many cell layers thick do you see this epithelium? It's one, so that is a simple epithelium. And I'm not oversimplifying this. It really is. Really just that simple. What about this one right here? Whoa, hold on, let me. How many different ways can I have it? The last way works, okay. Good. Yeah, I'm still not sure. Okay. Here's some connective tissue down over here. There really are cells in there, but we didn't draw them in the illustration. So here is the basement membrane. Here's the free surface. Right, and what kind of epithelium does that look like?
Stratified.
It's definitely stratified. Look at all those cells. And we name the cell shape by the apical layers. These are squamous. So it's a stratified squamous epithelium. Okay. All right, so that's what you have to know about epithelium. But there's something else, too, that I'll reiterate. And that is, what can you tell me about the extracellular space between these cells? I don't see much extracellular space. It's what? One cell packed tight up against another, up against another, up against another. That is a characteristic of epithelium. And as a matter of fact, these cells are so closely packed together, there's not even room for a blood vessel in an epithelium. So epithelium doesn't have blood vessels either. There are blood vessels down in the connective tissue right here. So that's an important consideration for epithelium. There is very little extracellular space. Extracellular means what? Outside of the cell. All right, so that's an important characteristic of epithelium. And I guess there is one other thing about epithelium. So they cover a surface or line a cavity, and they can do something else. There's one other function. They can also form glandular tissue. So epithelia, layers of epithelium can form glands. So I guess that's another important thing. And remember, there are two kinds of glands. There are exocrine glands or endocrine glands. Is that on the board? Yeah. An exocrine gland is a kind of gland that has a duct. So that gland is going to secrete a product, and that product is going to go into a tube, and that tube is going to carry it to where it has its activity, where it should be going. Like your salivary gland has a tube, and guess where it takes saliva? To your ear?
No,
because then you drool out of your ear. It doesn't go there. It goes where? I know, it's really gross. Goes to your mouth. Okay? So a salivary gland has a duct that takes saliva to your mouth, which is where it belongs. That would be an example of an exocrine gland. There are other things called endocrine glands. Endocrine glands have no ducts. So you might wonder, well, if this gland is secreting something and it doesn't have a duct, how does it get to where it's supposed to be? You know, that product is supposed to be all over inside your body. And so an endocrine gland secretes a product. That product is what we call a hormone. And a hormone is absorbed by your circulatory system. And your circulatory system takes it where? Everywhere in your body. So two different kinds of glands. One has a duct and the other doesn't. And you should know the definition of those two. All right? Okay. So the endocrine glands have a little bit easier job. They don't have to have a duct system on their own. They use the circulatory system to do that. All right. So now I think we're done with epithelium. And let's see. I put the audio recordings on the internet again if you want to go back and listen to them. And sometime soon I'll put today's recording on there as well. All right. The next kind of tissue on your list. What's the next kind of tissue? Connective tissue. Right, there are a number of different kinds of connective tissue, but you're going to see that there are some similarities between these. But just like an epithelium, you have to know its general features, its general reasons why we have connective tissue. Like for an epithelium, it does what? It covers stuff. Right? It also forms glands. But for connective tissue, it holds tissues and cells together. It supplies support for the body. So that's what we call a connective tissue. And in distinction to epithelium, it has an extensive extracellular space or extracellular material. And it's so special, we actually give it a special name. We call it the matrix. So connective tissue, at least most connective tissues, have numbers of cells with big spaces between the cells, and that space between the cells is what we call the matrix. So let's see if we can take a look at some kinds of connective tissues. I'll put all this epithelium away. Flip that over. Okay, so here is a pretty good picture of a kind of connective tissue. So when we look at this connective tissue, here I see a cell. And if this was an epithelium, we would find a cell, another cell right next to it, and then another one right next to it. But that's not the case for connective tissue. We don't find another cell. As a matter of fact, if I go to the right over here, I don't even see another cell. If I go up, I see a couple. So there's this huge space between cells. What do we call this space between cells in a connective tissue? Okay, those are some components. But the most general term would be the matrix. So the space between the cells is the matrix, and connective tissue has an extensive matrix. It means it has different components in there. And what do we see in the matrix? We see some of these threads or fibers. And there are different kinds of threads and fibers. These big thick ones right here are collagen fibers. These are like steel cables. What can you tell me about a steel cable if you try to stretch it? It's not going to stretch. That's the beauty of collagen. It just doesn't stretch. All right? Or if you have like a Kevlar thread. I don't know if anybody knows what Kevlar is, but it's a new space age material. It doesn't stretch. It's a lot lighter than a steel cable. And so this collagen is like a Kevlar cable or thread that's holding your tissues together. It doesn't stretch. But if you have a thread and you push the ends of the thread together, will it collapse? Sure, but if you pull the ends of the thread apart, it won't stretch, right? So we call that tension. These kinds of fibers can resist pulling, but they can't resist compression. You can shrink them, you just can't make them any longer. So collagen is the strongest kind. Then we have some intermediate kinds right over here. These are elastic fibers. Guess what's the cool thing about elastic? If you stretch it, it stretches a little bit, and if you don't overdo it, it goes back to where it was, right? So that kind of connective tissue, loose connective tissue, can resist stretching, and in some dimensions it can be stretched, and as long as you don't overstretch it, like you can overstretch elastic, right? If you have like elastic in your socks or something and you really pull the sock apart, you'll break the elastic. But if it's not overstretched, they will pull the tissue back together the way it was. But it's not nearly as strong as the collagen. And these fibers are secreted into the matrix by these cells. So guess what the name of the cell is? That's a fibroblast, because a fibroblast secretes fibers into the matrix. So that should make sense to you, right? You don't necessarily have to memorize that too much. And furthermore, we have a jelly-like material that fills up the rest of the matrix, and we call that the ground substance. So that's like a jello or a jelly. It's hydrated. There's a lot of water in it. But it's not very strong. It can't resist tension or compression. It just kind of holds all these cells in place. So when you look at this kind of tissue, all right, my eye would just automatically say loose connective tissue, because to me, it just kind of looks like a stained glass window with all the little fracture patterns in it, right? So you have to know these fibers right here. The strongest one is called collagen. And collagen is secreted into the matrix by the fibroblast right there. Right. Okay. So that's just kind of a general description of the basic kind of connective tissue. Then there are other kinds of connective tissue. For instance, there's a kind called dense connective tissue. And it has a lot of collagen in it. And the collagen is produced by what kind of cell again? The fibroblast. Collagen forms the extracellular matrix, and this kind of connective tissue makes tendons and ligaments. And tendons or ligaments are things that connect bones together or muscle to a bone connection, so it has to be a very strong connection, right? It should never rip apart. So you have even more collagen in this kind of connective tissue compared to the loose connective tissue. And this is what dense connective tissue looks like. All of these fibers right here, they're all parallel to each other. Right? This matrix is just filled with collagen. It's just packed with collagen. So it's very strong. If you try to pull it from end to end, there's just no way it's going to stretch. And tendons and ligaments are very strong. They hardly break in that dimension at all. But if you pull on a tendon from side to side, guess what? You can damage a tendon pretty easily, because now you're not pulling along the long axis of the thread. You can actually separate the collagen fibers. And that's where most tendinous and ligamentous injuries occur. When somebody uses a joint inappropriately, like when you sprain an ankle or something, you pull on a tendon from side to side and it can rip in the middle, but it won't rip from end to end. And so, what's the name of the cell that secretes all these collagen fibers in dense connective tissue? That's going to be a fibroblast again. Okay, just the same name. So these are all fibroblasts. And can you tell this is not an epithelium? Mm-hmm. How could you tell? Because look at all these cells. They're really far apart. In an epithelium, they're going to be packed close together. I don't see a basement membrane. I don't see a free edge, right? So that's how I would recognize that for a dense connective tissue. All right, what's another kind of connective tissue? Well, I'm just going to show you some slides. Here's another kind of connective tissue. And when I look at this, I see a cell here, and then way over here, another cell, and then over here, a couple cells. So could that be an epithelium? No. That's too far apart. So what do we call the space between cells? The matrix, right. Now this is a special kind of connective tissue. The cells are found in these little pits or little holes. within the matrix. And these little holes right here, little lakes, are what we call lacunae. They're like little ponds, okay? These are lacunae, and the cells are inside the lacunae. So there's a cell inside that space. Here's the matrix. This is what cartilage looks like. And I don't see any fibers in here. So the names of these cells, we don't call these fibroblasts. We call these cartilage cells. But we can't get away with that name. We've got to use a scientific name. We got to call those chondrocytes. Chondrocytes. So what does site mean? C-Y-T-E. That means, that just means cell, right? And chondro then really means what? Cartilage. Anytime you hear that word chondro, you should automatically think cartilage. And so these are mature cartilage cells. And there is collagen in this matrix right here, but it's a different form of collagen. It's very soluble, and it forms more like a gel, a semi-solid, rather than a cable. Okay. So these are chondrocytes in lacunae. And then outside the lacunae, you have the matrix. And this kind of cartilage makes up something like your nose. All right, so what the nice thing about cartilage is that it can form a fairly solid structure and give your body form, but it's really light. And it deforms a little bit, so if you bump your nose, you're not going to break like a bone or something. If all the cartilage in your body was bone, you'd need a lot more energy every day to move it around. It would be really, really heavy. So that's an advantage of cartilage. Plus, it can bend a little bit and go back to its original position. Right. Other kinds of cartilage. Here's another kind of cartilage. And now I can see some fibers in it. Can you see these fibers here and here? All right, so hyaline cartilage really didn't have any fibers. This one here has some fibers. And these fibers are elastic fibers. What's the neat thing about those elastic fibers? I can't hear you. It stretches and what? Goes right back to where you, the original location. All right, so for instance, cartilage in your ear is elastic cartilage. And again, the cells that we have in cartilage are called, what are cells in cartilage? They're chondrocytes. And they're always found in lacunae, those little holes right there in the cartilage. All right, so just chondrocytes in lacunae, and there's ground substance with elastic fibers. All right, now there are a couple parts in your body where there is cartilage, but it has to be stronger still. Stronger than hyaline cartilage, stronger than elastic cartilage. There is cartilage between the bones that make up your spinal column, your vertebral column. Those bones we call vertebrae. So there is cartilage between the vertebrae, and guess what? All of your weight is supported by your vertebral column. So the vertebrae are pressing on each other real hard, so the cartilage between them has to be strong. So here is the strongest kind of cartilage. Now we see what? Big fibers right in here. Those are collagen fibers. So we call this fibrocartilage. It shouldn't move around very much. It's designed to be strong. Right? It can maybe compress a little bit, but it really shouldn't stretch or twist or anything like that. And also in your knee, you have fibrocartilage. There's a thing called a meniscus that holds your thigh together in just the right way with your lower leg. That's fibrocartilage as well. But you can imagine the forces in your knee, because where's your knee compared to the rest of your body? Is way down below, right, the most of the mass of the rest of your body, so that has to be a really strong cartilage. So again, I see a chondrocyte in a lacunae, and there's the matrix, the cartilaginous matrix. So what would we call these cells? These are chondrocytes again. So chondrocytes we see in cartilage. They secrete these collagen fibers and the ground substance. Okay, so that's it for cartilage. The next one is probably really easy to see. I don't have an illustration of it. Oh yeah, I do. There's one right next to it. It almost looked like the regular picture. So if you look at this, I see a cell here and here and here and here, separated by a big space. So could that be an epithelium? No way, okay? It's a connective tissue. And What do you see when you look at this? Do you see any kind of pattern? I see a bunch of circles, right? We call those concentric lamellae. I don't know if you have to know that, but these are just what? Concentric circles? Circle within a circle within a circle. But in reality, if we were to look at a nice long bone, those would be actual tubes. There'd be tubes inside tubes inside tubes. And so this is bone connective tissue. And these cells, similar to cartilage, are found within lacunae. But I can't really see it. It just looks like all a homogeneous space inside this dark dot right here. But there's actually a cell inside this hole in the matrix. Now these cells, we can't call chondrocytes. Why can't we call these cells chondrocytes? Because it's not cartilage. Right. Okay, so I tried to trick you a little bit, but that's not too tricky. So we can't call these chondrocytes because it's not cartilage. It's bone connective tissue. So the word for bone is osteo, right? Osteo. And so these are what we call osteocytes. These are all osteocytes in lacunae. This thing right here is not a lacunae. This is just a central canal that is carrying blood vessels up and down through the bone. So I see more blood vessels here, more blood vessels here. There's going to be some more here and here. So does bone have a lot of blood vessels in it? A lot of blood vessels everywhere. Okay, so when you break a bone, that bone is going to bleed. That's the downside to it. And that could be real serious. I'm sure people have hemorrhaged to death in a short period of time when they break a big bone like a femur or something. But the advantage of having a good vascular supply is that it carries nutrients and oxygen so that a bone can regenerate relatively easily. It has good oxygen supply and nutrients. It will rebuild itself. It will heal relatively quickly. Maybe 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks, something like that in that range. So that's a nice feature. But if we were just to look at, for instance, cartilage, like this one right here, do you see any blood vessels? No. So that's kind of nice if you ever fracture this cartilage or smash it real bad. It won't bleed. You won't bleed to death. But guess what? It won't heal. Okay, so cartilaginous injuries just don't heal very well at all. Okay, and also, let's go back to looking at, can you remember what this one was? This is dense connective tissue. Do you see any blood vessels in here? Again, no blood vessels in tendons and ligaments. So if one damages a tendon or a ligament, how well does it repair itself? Hardly at all, because it doesn't have oxygen and nutrients to repair itself. But with bone, thank goodness, there are blood vessels. Bone can regenerate and can heal itself very nicely. The other thing that I see on this diagram are these little lines. Okay, going back and forth between the lacunae and the osteocytes in the lacunae, and they even reach up and touch this central canal that has blood vessels. Chemicals can move around by diffusion. They can move by diffusion through like air that's in the room or through a fluid, but chemicals can't diffuse through a solid structure like this desktop or through bone. So these little lines right here represent little tiny tunnels that allow for diffusion of oxygen and nutrients and waste products to exchange themselves with this blood vessel right here. And those little tubes are what we call canaliculi. So they're not little fractures or breaks in the bone. They're actually designed to be there so that diffusion between the different osteocytes can take place. All right, so that's a pretty easy one to identify. Pretty easy. Ah, which one was this? Which one was that? Dense connective tissue, right, dense connective tissue. What do you call those cells? Fibroblasts. What's this one? Bone connective tissue, right, because you see all those circles. It actually reminds me of like a plant, right, with like a tree, like tree rings right there. So you don't have to look at it for a really long period of time to know that that's bone connective tissue. What do you call those cells in bone?
Osteocytes.
Now let's zoom in. Here's a nice picture. Let's zoom in to a lacunae. So here is a picture of bone. And so this is the bone matrix right here. Here is that cell, what we call a bone cell. osteocyte, and that osteocyte is situated inside this hole in the matrix that we call a lacunae. Right, so here's the lacunae, there's a nice nucleus of this osteocyte. So an osteocyte is a mature bone cell, and its job is to maintain the matrix. And maybe I'll just say something really fast. Like, we see a column right here that's holding up the building that's made out of cement. It kind of looks like a bone, all right? Maybe in some sense, because bone is real strong. It can't compress. That column doesn't compress very well either. That's why it's holding up the rest of the building. But that column is dead. It's just sitting there. Once you build that cement column, it just sits there for years and years and years, decades, not hundreds of years yet, but, you know, a long time. Your bones, on the other hand, are not like that pillar. They are like the pillar in the sense that they don't compress, but it's not like that pillar because your bones have what? Living cells in them. And all of the bones in your body are completely rebuilt every 5 years. I can't make a five because I'll drop the pen. 5 years. So that means your bones are always being dissolved away and then rebuilt in the right location. So that just means what? That these cells are really busy doing their job maintaining the health of your bones all the time. You don't have any bones in your body that were there 5 years ago. That's pretty amazing. That's not true with that column right there. Okay, so bone is a very much living tissue. Okay, another kind of connective tissue. This one is, so we looked at a couple of kinds of connective tissue that what? Resists pulling. That was dense connective tissue. Bone resists compression. You can't compress a bone. But here is kind of a funny one. And this one has a matrix. I see spaces between the cells right here. But this kind of connective tissue has a fluid matrix. What can you tell me about a fluid? A fluid will flow through your body, right? It moves. It can flow. So here's the connective tissue that connects all the different parts of your body because it flows. It flows from one space to another. And so this connective tissue is what we call blood, right? Blood CT, your blood connective tissue. And most of the cells in blood are what we call red blood cells. Do they look red to you right here? No, not really. I don't know. They never look red to me ever. But we call them red blood cells because they probably look red to somebody at some point in time. Or maybe underneath a microscope they look red. And the job of these red blood cells are to carry oxygen everywhere in your body. And your mitochondria need oxygen to make ATP. So these are the guys that are bringing oxygen everywhere in your body for those mitochondria to make ATP. And then you see some of these that kind of look blue right here and right here. Do they look blue? Yeah. Yeah. These are what we call white blood cells. Okay. And that's because if we put thousands or millions of these white blood cells together, they really don't look blue. They look white. They're kind of a cream color or buffy or something. Right? So they're called white blood cells, even though... And I don't think they've been stained here. They kind of just, maybe this was stained with some kind of stain and the white blood cells took up that blue stain and they looked blue. All right, and the job of these white blood cells is to fight infection. All right, so your body is at war constantly with other organisms that are trying to get in there and take it over. And it's the job of these white blood cells to fight infection. Bacteria, viruses, fungi, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And then the last part, since blood is a fluid, if you perforate yourself, if you cut yourself, put a hole in yourself, guess what's going to happen to that fluid? It's going to just roll right out, right? It's just going to flow out of your body. So one of the functions of blood is to prevent blood loss. And these little jobbers right here, these little tiny, tiny cell fragments, we call these platelets, these are the things that can plug up a hole in a blood vessel to prevent you from bleeding to death if you're normal. Okay? That's not always guaranteed because there are some people that suffer from a condition, what's a condition where you can't stop bleeding? It's called hemophilia. There are a lot of different kinds of blood disorders that we might talk about, but one is hemophilia. And years ago, before there was medical treatment, if you had a little tiny paper cut in your finger, if you're a hemophiliac, guess what? You could bleed to death as a result of that. It's really hard for us to imagine that particular circumstance, okay? So it's the job of these platelets to keep you from bleeding to death. So what are those three kinds of cells again? Oh, you had a question?
No. Nope.
Okay. The three kinds of cells are the oxygen-carrying cells called red blood cells, the cells that fight infection, white blood cells, and the cells that prevent you from bleeding to death are the platelets. Yeah. So that's kind of a nice quick overview of blood, and that's a connective tissue because it connects all the different parts of your body because why? It flows. So what can you tell me about, so what we call that plasma, that fluid, but it's also the matrix. Yeah, it's the matrix between the cells. So it's got a fluid matrix. And then I've got a very atypical kind of connective tissue to show you. So what's one of the most important things about a connective tissue that we learn? That the cells are far apart from each other. They have an extensive matrix. Yeah. Yeah. Why do they separate? Well, I'm in a hospital, we would like to separate them because sometimes somebody needs a transfusion of just red blood cells, but that person's platelet count is fine, so they don't need platelets. Other people's red blood cells are fine, but they have trouble clotting, so they only need platelets, so we'll just give them platelets instead of whole blood. Other people are missing white blood cells, red blood cells, and platelets, and plasma, so we just give them whole blood. So depending on what somebody needs, we give them that particular component. But if there's platelets in blood and we try and store it, it's probably kind of tricky to store because it's going to have a tendency to clot. And if it clots, you can't give it to anybody else. So that might be another reason why we want to separate the platelets from blood when you donate blood, just so that the red blood cells will store a lot longer. Okay, so those are just some things. And of course, if we take blood from somebody and we're going to transfuse it into somebody else later, there are ways to prevent that blood from clotting, but then if we transfuse it into somebody, it won't help them, right? So we need to protect the function of clotting. So separating it, and then if it needs to be recombined, we can recombine it. All right, so what was I saying? Back to connective tissue. The cells are what? Far apart. What's that space between the cells called again? The matrix, and in blood it's called plasma. It's plasma, but it's matrix. Here is a really strange kind of connective tissue. And this is adipose tissue, otherwise known as fat. So here is an adipocyte. What's an adipocyte? It's a fat cell. And inside that fat cell, it's filled with triglycerides. It's filled with fat. That's an energy, very important energy storage form. All right. But so here is an adipocyte. Where's the next one? Right next to it. And where's the next one? Right next to that. So adipose connective tissue kind of looks like epithelium because the cells are close to each other. All right. And here's a little nucleus and a little bit of cytoplasm, and the rest of the cell is just filled up with a droplet of lipid. And here's a little extracellular space, that little triangle there, that little triangle right there. That's the extracellular space. So adipose tissue is atypical because it has very little extracellular material. Other kinds of connective tissue, the extracellular material is what? Extensive, like in blood and in bone and things like that. All right, but nonetheless, that's a connective tissue. Has very little matrix. Adipose connective tissue has very little matrix. So I think I have that in your notes. Adipose atypical, very little extracellular matrix. Mostly intracellular fat in adipocytes, but that's a nice storage form of energy. And we say that's really nice storage form of energy because this is all fat in here. Does fat mix with water?
No.
Okay. So this energy right here is stored in an anhydrous form. And actually, this is sort of an interesting consideration. If that energy molecule that was in the cell had to be mixed with water in order to store it, what would be the weight of this cell? It would even be heavier. Okay. So this is a really nice evolutionary adaptation because now we can store a lot of energy and it's still relatively light in terms of the amount of energy that we can store in these cells. If we had to put water inside the cell, in order to store fat, that cell would even be heavier still. Okay. So that's the advantage of having fat. It's relatively lightweight. Okay. So let's see. We covered all of these right here. Blood, bone, cartilage, adipose. Good. What's next? What's the next kind of tissue?
Muscle.
What is muscle specialized to do?
Contract.
Contract, right? So muscles can shorten. They can contract. So we got that on the slide. It's composed of long threads of fibers. Okay, where the and each cell actually looks like a thread or a fiber. So a lot of times we interchange the name fiber and cell. When we say muscle fiber, we really mean muscle cell, for instance. Okay. So they're much the length of the cell is much greater than the diameter of the cell, and a muscle is also called a fiber. But we got three kinds. We got skeletal muscle. Skeletal muscle makes up muscles that you can consciously and voluntarily move your body with. For instance, you got a muscle in your arm right here. You probably know the name of this muscle already. Okay. This one right here, see it bulging up like that? That's the biceps, right? That's the biceps. That's a skeletal muscle. So it's shortening and it's pulling on a couple bones and it's pulling those bones together. So it's important for conscious control of your body, and it makes up about 40% of your body weight. So you have a lot of muscle. It's a muscle fiber or muscle cell is really long. It's really narrow. You can't see it with your naked eye because it's so narrow, but it could be a foot long. And the reason is because a muscle fiber, before it became part of your body, was thousands of individual cells that fused together to form this big long tube. And so that new cell has what? Thousands of nuclei in them because all those cells fused together. So in most cases, you would think if there was a cell, how many nuclei should it have? It should just have one. But a muscle fiber is made up of thousands of cells, so it has all of those thousands of different nuclei in it. So we call it multinuclear, a muscle cell. And if we look at it underneath a microscope, like what I have right here, we see all these stripes right here. And we call those stripes striations. And we're going to see where those striations come from when we get to the muscle chapter. But in this chapter, this is really a nice way to see skeletal muscle. They're long, they're not branched, and we see striations. And look at all these nuclei inside that little cell right there. Look at all those nuclei. So this is what it really looks like. And it's under voluntary control. That means that you have conscious control at when to contract that muscle and when to relax that muscle. You know, unless there's damage to that muscle, because you've all gotten a cramp sometime, like in your neck or your back or your calf or something. All right, but under normal conditions, that muscle doesn't contract unless you will it to contract. The next kind of muscle is called cardiac muscle. You'll see some similarities and differences compared to skeletal muscle. There's only one nucleus per cell. That means that these cells are not really long. They're still short. And it's striated. Let's see if we can see the striations. Here's an example of cardiac muscle. Can you see the stripes in it? Yeah. And I see some stripes over here. Those are what we call striations. So both skeletal and cardiac muscle is striated. Let's put the skeletal muscle right here. All right? Striations, striations. But can you see a difference between these two? By the shape of the cells. Who could tell me maybe a difference that you see? Skeletal is longer. Cardiac. A cardiac cell goes from here to here. That, so it's short. But what else do you see? Is it just a long tube? You see what? Oh yeah, you're right. There's only a single nucleus. I only see one nucleus inside that cell. But look at these branches right here. You don't see branches in skeletal muscle, only in cardiac muscle. But the other difference is, this cardiac muscle, you don't have control over. The heart will contract on its own, automatically. Sometimes it's regulated by nerves that go to it. But even if we were to rip a heart out of even a frog or a reptile, I know this is gruesome, but it's just a thought experiment. Don't really try this at home. Okay, or a mammal or a human, if we were to take the heart out of a body and put it on the table, guess what it would do? It would still beat, okay, on its own. All right, so you don't need to think about how your heart contracts at all. All right, but for instance, I could say, okay, put your books away and let's take a pop quiz right now. Are you guys ready for a pop quiz? What? Yes, fantastic. But most of you, what happened to your heart rate? It went up. You don't have control over your heart, but I did it in that particular instance. So you can influence your heart rate by playing tricks, right? In meditation, you can slow it down, but it's not like lifting up a glass of water to take a drink or something, right? You can't really stop your heart. You can't really force it to speed up, but by meditating, okay, you can influence the heart rate. All right, so the heart is branched, a single nucleus. It's under what we say involuntary control. And there's something else too. These dark lines right here represent the end of the cell and the beginning of a new cell. They have a special name. Are they on here? Ah, good, thank goodness. These are what we call intercalated discs. Because when this cell contracts, it's got to pull on something strong. It pulls on the intercalated disc so it doesn't rip away from the next muscle fiber right here, because all the muscles have to pull on each other for the heart to pump blood. So the intercalated disc is a very strong junction between cells that doesn't rip apart, but there is something else that's real important about that intercalated disc. Okay? And it's the following. A little bit of a long discussion, but not too bad. If you just think of that biceps brachii once again, what are the different ways that biceps brachii can contract? When you will that biceps brachii to contract, does it always contract with full strength? When I say, okay, biceps contract, does it just go bam and punch me in the face? No, you could pick up, a very light pencil, all right, and control that contraction very nicely. Or you could lift up a really big heavy weight and use a lot of the muscle to lift that weight up. And that's because each one of these muscle fibers right here can be contracted independently of each other. They're not really connected electrically to each other, as opposed to your heart. These intercalated discs allow electricity to flow from one cell to another, and that's why when your heart contracts, the whole heart contracts, not just a little piece of it. It always contracts with the strength necessary to pump blood, the whole heart. Okay, and that you don't want to have with skeletal muscle. In the heart, if one muscle cell contracts, guess what? They all contract. And that's why, because they're all connected to each other through these branching patterns and these intercalated discs. But you don't want that for skeletal muscle, because what would happen if we were just to contract one muscle in the arm, and that would cause all your muscles in your body to contract? That would be terrible, right? You'd lift up a glass to drink water and your whole body would contract. You wouldn't have any friends, probably. All right, so that's cardiac muscle. The last kind of muscle is what we call smooth muscle. They're short. They only have one nucleus. They kind of look like a football that's been stretched out from end to end. It's got two pointy ends right here. Now, do you see striations? No striations. So that means some of the internal structure is different. And these are also under automatic control, involuntary control. So that's something else that you should be aware of, involuntary control. Oh, I got this thing in my ear. Okay, I just noticed that. Okay. Okay, so it's under involuntary control. So what does that mean, voluntary versus involuntary? This is really a scary thought. What do you have control of in your body? Skeletal. Do you have control over the growth of your fingernails?
No.
Yeah. The growth of your skin, your hair? Okay. Control of your heart?
No.
Control of when you salivate?
No.
When your pupils dilate or constrict?
No.
As a matter of fact, you're right. The only thing that you have voluntary control of in your whole body are just these cells right here. Skeletal muscle. That's kind of a scary thought. Everything else is taken care of automatically. And we're going to look at part of the nervous system that controls everything automatically. That's called the autonomic nervous system. So that's the only kind of cell you have voluntary control over. You have voluntary control over your thoughts, I suppose, but that's not like a muscle. But that takes us to the last kind of tissue. That is what? Nervous tissue. Okay? And nervous tissue doesn't contract. It's not specialized for contraction because that's a muscle cell. And nervous tissue makes up the brain, the spinal cord, and also nerves that are outside the brain and spinal cord. So where's your brain? Up here in your head. And your spinal cord goes through your vertebral column, and then all the other nervous tissue outside your brain and spinal cord are what we call nerves, your peripheral nervous system. And the kinds of cells that make up the nervous system, there are two kinds. There are ones that we call neurons. These actually conduct electrical impulses. So you might actually want to put a little carrot right here and say what? Electrical. There's electricity going through those nerves. And the other kind are what we call, can anybody say that right there? Okay. They're called neuroglia. Neuroglia cells, or you could say neuroglial cells, right, or neuroglia. These right here don't carry electrical information, but they're in between the neurons. They're kind of like a packing material that holds the neurons in the right location, and the neuroglia tell how the neurons should be hooked up to each other, how they communicate with each other. And that's one thing that we learned about computers not too long ago, is that what can we do? We could have 100 computers, and they could be pretty smart, all right, if they're just standing alone, all doing separate jobs, but how could we make those 100 computers even smarter? We could connect them together with a network, right, like the internet or something. We can make a network or an intranet. Well, it's the job of these neuroglia cells to define what that network is and how it operates. And that's really what we think of as intelligence. So the neuroglia have a real important job. They don't carry electrical information, but they determine how the brain is wired together, which is real important. And a picture of a neuron would be like this. And you can see, so here is what we call the cell body or the soma of a neuron. And a neuron has what? These really long processes coming out of it. And those processes could be a meter or 2 meters long. So this cell body could be in your spinal cord, and this long axon right here or process could go all the way down to your big toe, carrying electrical information down to your big toe, maybe causing a little muscle to contract or something in your big toe. Okay, and all these other little dots over here just represent the support cells. We call these the neuroglial cells. And it helps define where these different parts of the neuron should go to and how they connect up with other neurons. So nervous tissue isn't too hard to see. Sometimes we talk about a nerve impulse. And I'm going to use some terminology here that you don't have to know for, I don't think, for this next test coming up. But eventually when we get to nervous system, it would be a good idea if you would have heard of this before. There's something called an action potential. And potential just really means voltage. Like, for instance, if I were to lick my fingers and put it in the socket in a wall, what would I feel? I would feel, yeah, voltage, electrical voltage. Okay? Now, don't do that at home either. All right? But that's what potential means. It means electrical voltage. And cells produce electrical voltage. We're very electrical beings, actually. And so a nerve impulse is what we call an action potential or an action voltage. So what can you tell me about that word action? What does that mean? Is it just sitting there? It's moving someplace, right? So an action potential is some motion of this voltage. It's moving along a nerve cell. So a nerve impulse is an action potential moving along a nerve cell. Like electricity running down this axon right here would be an action potential. And sometimes we would call that a nerve impulse. Okay. It uses ATP, definitely needs ATP. Like when we look around the room or think certain thoughts, those are action potentials, nerve impulses in our brain. Can't happen without ATP, most definitely. Now what about membranes? Did we talk about membranes in here already? Is this kind of a review? All right, membranes, what, a thin sheet or layer that covers a structure or a cavity. So if it's going to cover something, you should automatically think of what kind of tissue covers a surface or lines a cavity? Epithelium, right? It's an epithelium. So a membrane is part epithelium, but it's also part loose connective tissue. And you kind of saw what loose connective tissue looks like. We got two kinds of membranes. We got a mucous membrane versus serous membranes. And a mucous membrane lines a cavity which is open to the outside world. Could anybody give me an example of a cavity that's open to the outside world in your body? Mouth, oral cavity, nasal cavity, even your lungs, right? Your mouth and the tubes that connect your nose to your lungs, that's a trachea, that's open to the outside world. Your whole digestive tract is really open to the outside world, connected via what? Your mouth on one end. Right, and so that's lined with a mucous membrane, like the digestive tract, respiratory tract, excretory tract, and reproductive tract. Those are open to the outside world as well. Even though they're inside your body, they're open to the outside world. They're lined with a mucous membrane, and sometimes those mucous membranes actually secrete mucus. What's mucus? What kind of cell does it come from? Anybody remember? Mucus comes from a goblet cell, right? A goblet cell. And mucus is what kind of stuff? Yeah, it's that slippery stuff, right? It's part glucose, it's part sugar and part protein. And it's used for what? Lubrication. It's slippery, but it also helps fight bacterial infections, and it's pretty hardy stuff. It protects the lining that it is flowing over, okay? It protects the lining. All right, so that's the job of the mucous membrane. Some secrete mucus, but not all the time. A serous membrane, on the other hand, doesn't line a cavity that's open to the outside world. It's not open to the outside world. So give me the name of a cavity that's not open to the outside world. This is, I think, from chapter 1. Abdominal cavity. Yeah, that's not open to the outside world. And your mediastinum. And your pericardial cavity is not open to the outside world. Pelvic cavity is not open to the outside world. That has a serous membrane. And that's just a delicate layer of loose connective tissue and a simple squamous epithelium. So there are three main serous membranes. The pleural membranes that are around your lungs. The pericardial membrane. Peri means surrounding, and cardium or myocardium means your heart, right? And peritoneal cavity, or peritoneum, right, is the abdominal pelvic cavity. And remember, we can put two anatomical words together as long as we put that O between them. Abdominal, right here, the abdominal pelvic cavity, because the abdominal and pelvic cavity really aren't separated from each other by a muscle or membrane or anything. It's really one cavity. The pleural cavity is in the lungs, so it's surrounding the lungs. Pleural cavity is around the lungs. And you can get infections of these different membranes right here, the serous membranes. Does anybody know if when you get an infection of the pleural membrane, what's that called?
Bronchitis.
Maybe bronchitis, but I got a better term for it. Bronchitis would be actual tubes. This is the membrane surrounding the lungs. Pneumonia is inside your lungs. This is the surrounding on the outside still. This is what we call pleurisy. That's right, pleurisy. So here are membranes around the lungs, and when they get infected, they're very irritable. And what do your lungs do when you inhale? They expand, right? But now if you have these membranes around them that are very irritable, as soon as you start to stretch them, okay, it hurts. It hurts so bad it actually feels like somebody's stabbing you in the chest. Okay, really bad. I had it when I was a little kid. So if you inhale and it feels like somebody's stabbing you in the chest with a knife, what do you have a tendency to do? You have a tendency, well, not to want to breathe, right? Because it hurts you so bad. Well, how long can you not breathe for? You're not very long, because if you hold your breath for a long period of time, how do you feel? Well, you're miserable, right? So when you have pleurisy, you're really miserable, because it hurts really bad when you breathe, and when you don't breathe, that doesn't help because you feel bad too. So you need to go and get that infection treated, antibiotics. But what else should you be treated with so that you can breathe? Opiates, right? Painkillers, for instance, so that you're not inhibited from breathing, because breathing is what? Breathing is good. Yes, breathing is necessary. Breathing is necessary and good. Okay. All right, the pericardial membrane around the heart, that can get an infection too. Guess what that's called? Pericarditis. And, of course, that's a very serious condition, because you want your heart to operate normally, just like you would want your lungs to operate normally. And an infection of the peritoneal membrane, what do we call that? That is called peritonitis. And so that's any kind of infection of the abdominal pelvic cavity, and that maybe has happened to somebody in here. Did anybody have an appendicitis? And if that appendix actually bursts, then that material ends up in the abdominal pelvic cavity, that would be a fairly severe peritonitis. And I used to think that would always be fatal, but it's not always fatal. It just really makes you miserable. Okay. So you can live through a burst appendix, but it's not very comfortable. Okay. So those are some of those different membranes. So let's look at the study sheet. Should we answer some questions? And then we're done with this chapter. Get those out. The first question is, how many tissues are found in the body?
Four.
There's only four. All right. What are they called?
Connective.
Muscle. Nerve. And what's the fourth one I didn't say yet? I said connective, muscle, nerve. Epithelium. Right. Epithelium. You know what? In all my anatomy classes and physiology classes, I always ask students, what are the four kinds of tissues? And nobody can remember. It's not really hard. So don't forget. Okay. Those four kinds of tissues. What is an epithelium? It's a covering of something, right? It can line a cavity too. It can line a cavity, but it covers a surface or lines a cavity. Oh, and a third thing, what else can an epithelium do besides a covering?
Secretion.
A secretion, right. It can form glands. And don't forget those two types of, what are the two types of glands? One with ducts and one without ducts. One with duct is a exocrine, and the one without is a endocrine. Okay. What are the different types of an epithelium by shape? Squamous, cuboidal, columnar, and then the weird one. Transitional, the shape shifter kind. And what about layers? Simple versus stratified. Yeah, that's pretty easy. Okay, so what is a connective tissue? What's a connective tissue? It's a kind of tissue that connects your body together, supports your body, holds your body together, like what you were saying. That's a connective tissue. And what are some types of connective tissue? Oh, okay.
Dense.
Like what makes tendons and ligaments. There's loose, that makes membranes. There's cartilage, right? A couple different kinds of cartilage, like hyaline cartilage, elastic, and fibrocartilage. And then also, oops, I can't get that for you. Bone is another kind of connective tissue. What's the fluid kind? Blood. And what's the atypical kind of connective tissue? The atypical kind. Adipose tissue is atypical because it doesn't have a matrix. The cells are tightly packed together. All right, so what is that matrix? What's matrix? The space between cells, right? The extracellular material. So really, a connective tissue is defined by the nature of the matrix. It's the connective tissue is defined more by the space between the cells than the cells themselves. What's the name of a cell that makes collagen? I'm sorry. Fibroblast, because collagen is a fiber. What's the name of a cell that can make elastic fibers? Anytime it makes a fiber, it's a
fibroblast.
Right. What's the name of a cell? Here's the next question. Name the cells found in bone.
Osteocyte.
What about in cartilage? Okay. Yeah, so bone is osteocyte, cartilage is chondrocyte, blood is red blood cell, white blood cell, and platelet. Dense connective tissue. In dense connective tissue, you have a lot of collagen, which is a fiber. So what kind of cells are in dense connective tissue? Fibroblasts.
So blood is fibroblast.
Dense connective tissue is fibroblast. Blood is red blood cell and white blood cell and platelet. The nice thing about recording this on tape is that you could go back and check your notes if you wanted to. You don't even have to download. You can just open it up on the internet. Adipose. What's the name of cells found in adipose tissue? Adipocytes. You could say fat cells, but that's not really good. Adipocyte is the best way of saying that. All right, so what chemical is produced by a fibroblast? We actually learned a couple. So what does a fibroblast produce? A fiber. What are some names of fibers that you learned? Collagen is important, as well as the stretchy one. Elastic. Yeah, elastic fibers. And then, what about a goblet cell? What does it secrete? Mucus, right. Know the three different types of muscle cells. What are they? Skeletal, cardiac, and smooth. Which one is under voluntary control? That's right. That's the only thing you have control of in your body. What does it look like? It's striated, and it's really long and narrow, and has a lot of nuclei. Has many nuclei. Skeletal has many nuclei. But it's long and narrow, not branched. What about cardiac muscle? It is striated like skeletal, but it's different because it's branched, and it only has one nucleus. And what's that junction between the cardiac muscle cells? Well, I'm making a lot more questions that are on your sheet right here, but I'm getting carried away. But this is all good for you to know. What? Yeah, it's called an intercalated disc, the junction between the cardiac cells. And then the last kind is a smooth muscle cell. Is it striated?
No,
it's not striated. Is it voluntary or involuntary?
No.
Involuntary. Oh, we didn't say where a smooth muscle is found. The GI tract,
urinary bladder,
reproductive organs, okay? Blood vessels have smooth muscles. Smooth muscles also in our airways that contract. So for instance, if you have asthma or emphysema, when those muscles contract, you can't just automatically, voluntarily relax them. They won't listen to your thoughts, unfortunately. Okay. Okay, number six, know the two types of cells of the nervous system. Neurons and, I'll make you say the next word. Yeah, neuroglia. I say neuroglia. Neuroglia. And neurons are what? Conduct impulses, neuroglia don't. And number seven, where is the pleural membrane?
Lungs.
Where is the pericardial membrane? Around the heart. Peritoneal membrane? Around the abdominal pelvic cavity. And what is a mucous membrane? It lines a cavity that is open to the outside world, like your oral cavity, nasal cavity, for instance. And a serous membrane lines a cavity that is not open to the outside world. Okay, like the abdominal pelvic cavity, pleural cavity, pericardial cavity are surrounded by a serous membrane. Okay, so that's everything that we learned in this particular chapter. So, I could ask to see if anybody has any questions.
The neurons, they conduct impulse.
Yeah, neurons conduct electrical signals, and those electrical signals we call nerve impulses. All right, so don't leave because you got a quiz yet. I mean, you don't have to take today's quiz because you get to drop two but I would take it anyway, just to get as many as you can. Neuroglia don't carry electrical impulses. All right, so please put all your books away. You could leave a pencil and a piece of paper on the table if you wanted to, but try to clear your desktops off. Get a Scantron out. And I'm going to turn the recorder off, unless somebody's got a question. Anybody have a question?